Welcome, everyone, through all time and space to an all-new episode of Weebs on the Weekends, a podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective look at an anime that premiered 10 years ago. On today's episode, we'll be talking about the 2003 anime Sonic X. I am one of your hosts, Jay Johnson, and with me today is our special guest, Kevin Long, an avid Sonic fan. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Pretty good. Although, didn't you say 10 years? This is 20. What's going on?
I know, right? Yeah, so I forgot what 20 is in like 10 or like the medals, but yeah, this is our first 20-year anniversary celebration. A lot of animes did come out in 2003, so we'll probably talk about that in a later episode, but Sonic X was something that we can definitely talk about more about later. But right now, with every guest, we open up with 9 anime that define your anime taste. So would you like to share with us your 9, please?
Yes, I would say my 9 anime are Bleach, Digimon Digital Monsters, Dragon Ball Z, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, Sword Art Online, Bobobo, Yu Yu Hakusho, Sonic X, and Pokemon Season 1.
Whoa, okay, cool. So yeah, all basically shonens of that showed up in like American broadcasting during the early, I guess, 1990s and 2000s. So you're definitely somewhere in your late 20s right now, I assume?
Yes, you could say that. Cool. I'm more of a Sonic fan than an anime fan these days, I'll admit.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, so you played Frontier, and I think we talked a little bit about that, and we'll bring that up a little bit later on. But your 9 doesn't really stand out as anything extraordinary. Do you like all the action, kind of like shonen male protagonist power fantasies?
Well, I wouldn't say that necessarily. I'd say I enjoy these anime more for their characters than I do for the action itself in many cases. For example, Yu Yu Hakusho, go rewatch episode 1. You'll cry. You'll cry. That episode is incredible. I think some of the later stuff really doesn't hold it up to it. Even stuff like the, you know, Elder Toguro fight everyone loves so much. I mean, it's good, but I really think, and I'd say that with Bleach too, that a lot of these animes start really good and then they kind of, you know, lose their way and just become a Dragon Ball Z copy.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So Yu Yu Hakusho was done by the creator of Hunter x Hunter. And then you have like Pokemon, Digimon. So there's a lot of emphasis on like the gang, kind of like the wholesomeness of getting a group of friends together and going on an adventure. So does that also like attract your interest of like developing bonds with people and like tackling big overwhelming life problems?
Well, now that you mentioned it, it might, yeah. Because like I said, I really like the characters, and so I like their interactions with each other, so getting a group of characters together is always nice.
Yeah, that's a solid 9. And then you mentioned a little bit that you had an extra 10, but we can skip over that one, because that seemed like the far left out field one. But yeah, it's a solid list.
Okay, I said, just somebody's going to be wondering, I said Girls Zoom Panzer as my 10th one. I watched that one pretty recently. I enjoyed it, and it's pretty atypical for me to watch a show like that, but I really liked the concept of little girls essentially riding around in tanks. I think that was very interesting because it's a show you would not make here in the States because, you know, Panzers are the bad guys, you know?
Yeah, it's a war machine. Yeah, it's like pairing two things that you wouldn't really expect.
Well, more than that, it's that those tanks were driven by Nazis. And I just don't think that would fly here to have little girls, and I don't think that would be a show people would think it would be edgier here than it is there.
Right, for sure. Yeah, because there's also, like, I mean, we don't really think about it, but yeah, there were a lot of corporations and products that came out of Nazi Germany during the time. I forget, like, was it Chanel, like a fashion brand, as well as BMW is also technically a Nazi enterprise. And then I forgot the other one. It's, like, very synonymous with, was it Pepsi or Dr. Pepper? But yeah, it's like, we look at those things just because they bled into our like pop culture or just everyday consumerism. But that's a big topic for later. But oh, and I should have brought that up actually during Girls in Panzer. But yeah, solid good 9 anime. Thank you for sharing. It's kind of going to reveal to us, like, especially since Sonic X is on your top 9. So yeah, let's get into some background about the show and then get into the show itself. So Sonic X has a total of 78 episodes. It originally premiered 20 years ago on April 6, 2003, and ran for roughly 2 years, ending in April 18, 2005. It was actually the first season that is an original storyline, where the second season and third season kind of diverged and went into Sonic Adventures and Sonic Adventures 2. It was animated by Studio TMS Entertainment, which is a long-running anime studio that I guess became more renowned in the West because they did Monster Ranchers and basically had a lot of 4Kids connections with their localization. Most recently, they're in charge of Stone World or Dr. Stone New World in 2023. So they're still long running and producing anime each year. The studio director, or at the time, the anime director, had also did Air Gear as well as the Naruto Shippuden movie. So, you know, some heavy hitters, at least in the realm of how it was directed and written, coming from Team Sonic. And then the story basically follows Sonic and his friends, basically transported to our world from their home world, and separated, Sonic must work with a human boy named Chris Thorndike. Yeah, Thorndike. And basically fight Dr. Eggman, find the Chaos Emeralds, and get back home. So that's the basic layout of the show. So why is this so high on your list, or at least why was it defining for you, Kevin?
Well, because I watched it when I was 9 years old, Jay. I think that's why it's a defining thing for me. But also, I like the show. I think it's an entertaining show. I think it's a show I remember pretty well that I watched the dub, but actually for this rewatch, I watched half of it dubbed, half of it subbed. And I can tell you, I think I like the dub better. And I know I saw it first, so, you know, there's that bias. But I just, my whole life, I always get the notes, like the dun, 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 dun. And that's just in the dub. And I feel like one of the big things the sub lacks is the soundtrack. But I'm getting off topic. One thing I should mention is that you did a great kind of a synopsis of the show, but you did make one mistake.
Okay. Was it about the transported to a different planet?
No. The mistake you made was that season 3 was not an adaptation. It was an original story.
Oh, is season 3 when they go to space, right?
Yes, it's when they Sonic cross Star Trek.
All right, cool. Okay, so season 2 was the Sonic Adventure 2 kind of adaptation, and then season 1 and season 3 were originals. Yeah, because fun fact, I do know that season 3 wasn't aired in Japan, is that it became so popular overseas that season 3 premiered in the US as well as Malaysia, Australia, New Zealand, I believe, with the other countries. But yeah, it was so popular in the West that Sonic X just continued for the season 3 and actually didn't premiere in Japan, I believe, until 2022, like pretty late on. But yeah, it's very interesting, the history of Sonic X, because this was baby's first Sonic. So like a lot of the Sonic voices that I came to know were from Sonic X. And it's very interesting, like you said, like listening to the dub or the 4Kids versions, like, oh, this was our version of these characters for a long time. Because I don't think they were, maybe you can speak more about this, but I don't think the voices changed until 2010.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there that they changed the voices, except for Mike Pollock as Eggman. They kept him because I guess they couldn't find anyone better. But yeah, this was definitely the post 9/11 Sonic.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, maybe you can speak a little bit about that. Is that, do you think that the voices match the characterization of the characters? Because Sonic was voiced by Jason Griffith, who hasn't done a lot of work, but he also voices Shadow. And I know from the Shadow the Hedgehog game, Hedgehog with Guns game, but Mike Pollock stayed on. So do you think there is something he does in his voice performance that makes him Dr. Eggman? Like, what about his voice kept him on, basically?
I just think he's so good at sounding sinister, but he's got that range where he can also be goofy. And he's just the perfect Eggman. And also, you might not realize this, he also voices Ella in this show, which is another incredible performance, if you ask me. Some people, your mileage may vary on that. Maybe it hasn't aged well.
Ella the maid?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I did find she's a very interesting character. I don't know if she goes so far into the caricature of a black person. I didn't really pay attention to it until like there was a fried chicken line and like somewhere in episode 8. But I was like, huh, okay. It's not as bad as like Mr. Popo or anything, or other iterations of people of color. But yeah, it was very humorous that they do rely on like a lot of racial humor in some of the scenes with her. So
Huh. Okay. Cool.
It's yeah. So interesting about, you bring that up because I've always interpreted her as Latina.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. I mean, she does dance sometimes. Huh. Latina. Okay. But a white guy voicing her, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's how they did things in 2003.
Yeah. And in other places nowadays. But yeah, Mike Pollack does stay on until, like, most recently Sonic Frontiers. He comes back for Boom and Forces. And, you know, he's just the Eggman of our generation, or he's been running Eggman for... what, 20 years now? So yeah, it's definitely
This was his first time, so and he's kept doing it for 20 years, and I hope he does it another 20.
Yeah, because his voice doesn't seem to have waned or weakened in his performance, especially in Frontiers. It's like, yeah, that's the Eggman that I know. But yeah, the sinister nature of it, and I think that's always been a problem with Eggman for me as a character, is that he was always a mismatch villain to Sonic. But yeah, when I got to like reading more of the Archie comics and the IGW comics, I kind of learned that, you know, Eggman was a force of nature, or, you know, plays in more of the, oh, this guy's an emperor, or he's seen as an emperor throughout the universe. But in Sonic X, I was introduced to him in the way of like just comedic fodder. And, you know, there's a lot of Sentai elements to Sonic X that we can talk about.
Yes.
Cool. And I was like, oh, and then I was like into episode maybe, it didn't really click to me until like episode like 14, like past the halfway point. It's like, oh yeah, this is an isekai too. So I need to put this on my isekai list of animes. Yeah. But
I guess technically it's an isekai as Sonic's going to another world, but I tend to define this subgenre as reverse isekai, because it's not Chris going to Sonic's world, that Sonic's going to Chris's world, which I actually think is far more interesting. Digimon, as I mentioned earlier, is one of my favorite anime. It starts out as an isekai, but midway through it becomes a reverse isekai where the Digimon are in the human world. And I think that is the strongest portion of the show. And then season 3 of Digimon, which Digimon Tamers in Japan, I think that's the strongest season, and it's almost entirely a reverse isekai. So, yeah, I really like that Sonic X is a... reverse isekai, but also, actually, that's something I wanted to bring up, is that they didn't go into it very hard, did they?
No, they didn't. No, and I think the first three episodes kind of sells that really clear. It's like, it opens with Dr. Eggman, like, getting the Chaos Emeralds and activating Chaos Control, and it's just like, oh, you're immediately in the world, but you kind of think, like, you would go either back and forth, or you think there would be some kind of resolution to it, but no, it's just, they're stuck there. And I was like, that's what kind of sold me on the idea that this is a reverse or isekai, period. Like, oh yeah, they don't get back to their world at all, and then they're just adapting and assimilating. And it's very interesting that they took that approach, because I was like, why wasn't this the storyline that they pursued with the most recent live action adaptation? Like, give Sonic the pet alien treatments, and instead of partnering up with the old man cop. It's like, it works well. It's like, Sonic is stranded. You know, he needs a child's wonderment to tone down his extreme elements and, like, kind of put that caretaker position onto him, kind of to rein in his, like, erratic behavior, his recklessness. And I was like, okay. But when you just pair him up with an adult, it kind of loses that.
You know, I think in some ways I agree, but I also really disagree, because I feel like this show can't decide if it is trying to be the prequel to a Sonic Adventure adaptation or an actual isekai show. It is torn between these two constantly. They never tell you that they're in San Francisco, California, or that the White House is in Washington, D.C. It's obviously the White House. They show the American flag. They show the Oval Office. Sonic's passport has an eagle on it. Like, he's in America, but they never mention that. And I think that's one of the major failings of Sonic X, is that they could explore a lot of interesting, you know, isekai storylines about Sonic reacting to our world, but because they don't want to admit that it's our world for some reason, you know, that aspect kind of falls apart to me. I feel like the episodes where they're not trying to do very much isekai stuff are stronger, because the isekai stuff they have is so weak.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, they heavy-handedly kind of suppress it, because, like, even Chris's uncle, his name is Uncle Sam. I was like, oh yeah, that's not heavy-handed at all. And then
I didn't catch that until midway through.
Right. Yeah, because, like, there is, like, just this ambiguity of the place that they're in. But, you know, like, they do model a lot of cities off San Francisco or the White House. They just show the White House, period. And the president just has – he's just called the president. And there's a lot of in-jokes about him getting reelected and, like, how the surveillance state of Sonic is, as well as, like, working alongside Eggman. So, like you said, there was a post – maybe it – influenced the writing a little bit, but you know, they would have
animated
this
so.
Way before 2001. But yeah, it's definitely written. It's like written in a way of like how they wrote the two towers out of Spider-Man 1, or was that Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Yeah, but whichever way.
No, Spider-Man 1.
Gotcha. It's so, very interesting in that way that Sonic did come under a lot of scrutiny with its localization and translating it from the west to, or from the east to the west.
Yeah, I may be reading into this too much, but Dr. Eggman strikes me in some episodes as a Saddam Hussein stand-in. Like, in some episodes, he's straight up acting as a terrorist, and, you know, the government is trying to figure out what to do. And I thought, you know, this show would not be written today. It wouldn't have been written 20 years before that. This is a show that exists in 2003 and was, you know, it is of its time.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to phrase it. It's like it's of its time. It's like something that doesn't work or wouldn't have worked outside of its limited time period of like 5 or like 2 years before and 2 years after. And, you know, the world changed after, you know, of course, this global event. But, yeah, it's definitely one of the weaknesses of the show itself is that it's written in a way that makes it a time capsule that it's not going to translate or you can recommend in the future to other people. It's like, yeah, you're not going to relate to anything. It doesn't make sense out of its own time period. And even when I went back to revisit it, I was like, oh, this is aged poorly. And that's not a thing against this animation, or even though like some of the techniques that they used to animate were like really stilted or low budget cost cutting measures that you can easily tell, especially with like the homing attack for Sonic. Ball maneuver? Homing attack? My bad, yeah. It's a very early way of CGI animation that they were using in a couple other shows, like Kirby Strikes Back comes to mind, or is it Kirby?
Kirby Right Back At You.
Right Back At You. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And,
I should have put that in my top 9. It's a great show.
Yeah, that's fair, because that's an outstanding series as well, but yeah. Oh, I wonder when that came out. But anyways.
It's around the same time. This was actually an era of, you know, video game anime that really started and then it ended very quickly. They also had F-Zero, which was also done by 4Kids, and I really enjoyed that one a lot. And then they only aired 9 episodes here and then quit airing it, which was sad for me. As a kid, I was just sitting there very sad. But let's, speaking of which, I think you mentioned Sentai influence. We should talk about that. Well, because you brought up the ring. The ring is just the Megazord. That's all it is.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, I know you're a big Sentai fan, but the things that I caught on right away were Eggman having like a card deck, Rolodex of monsters or robots.
Yeah, it's just Finster.
Right. Yeah. Finster. He has the giant robots, of course, and then the like IRL clash of like, oh, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers going to school, but then like Rita attacks and then it interrupts real life and then like everyone gets moved into action. But yeah, what were the other Sentai stuff that you saw?
Well, they have Deco and Boko, who are like very similar to the, you know, like Goldar type characters that are just kind of like there for comic relief and aren't really affecting the plot, and they're not really a big threat. I guess Goldar starts out as a threat, but by the end of the show, he's not a threat at all. And that's what Boko and Deco, that's the role they play. And as I mentioned, the ring, they hand Sonic the ring, and it's just the episode has to end now. Destroy the robot. Okay. And that's very similar to the Megazord, where it's just like, oh, okay, it's just this last thing that happens. And honestly, I hate the ring. I hate the ring whenever it shows up. It's just like, because there's no explanation for this. Nobody ever tells you why there's a ring. I saw those rings in the Sonic games, but why is this ring? They don't do that in the Sonic games. What's going on here? There's no explanation for that, and that's something that just gets me every time it shows up.
Right, because it shows up, I wasn't keeping track of how many times, but it's not as frequent as you think, but it is definitely a, you know, ex machina for Sonic to just overcoming overwhelming situation where he doesn't have to go Super Sonic yet. But it's also like, yeah, Sonic is already OP, and I think that's one of the problems I have with him as a character outside of the story itself. It's like, oh yeah, he's just going to win, or there's always a moral lesson for him. That's the challenge of like these cartoons. It's like, yeah, the only thing that is being structured around for kids' understanding is just like, oh, Sonic isn't, he doesn't like to be on water. So I think that was like near the end of the series, but he's like, oh yeah, so he needed to be taught patience. Same thing with like humility or
friendship. Oh yeah, that was a good episode actually.
Oh, when he's on the yacht boat? Yeah.
Yeah, he's on a yacht and he has to learn how to relax. And they bring in instructors to teach them how to relax. And I just think that's very funny because why would you need to be taught how to relax? That seems like the one thing that anyone should be able to do. And I think that that's very humorous. I think that one's more aimed at the Japanese audience because, of course, this was made by the Japanese. And I think they have such a work culture that maybe that's the kind of people that would need to learn to relax because they're just working so hard all the time.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that shows that this was written for kids because I watched this on YouTube. Where did you watch it?
I watched this on Hulu primarily. Oh, but I watched a couple episodes on Netflix. But Hulu has the subbed version right now and Netflix does not.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so all the four kids, all 78 four kids dubs are actually on YouTube, and that's how I watched it. So it's very interesting. Like, you can see even like the aspect ratio is still like in its original form, and you even see like the static feedback on like some of the edges of it as well. So just to talk about like it's for the four kids rating, which was basically non-existent at the time, and when they translated it from the original Japanese to American audiences, it needed a TV rating of 17 and younger. So I think it leans into a little bit more of that kind of age group. It's like, yeah, it's not just about Japanese and their moral ethics they're trying to pass on, but more like, oh, this is a babysitting service for kids to, you know, get a positive influence in their life. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, in that way, it feels a little bit more American. Like, cartoons should be aimed and non-violent and not suggestive of anything, while Japanese cartoons are a little bit more, you know, there are a lot more Japanese cartoons that show genitalia and alcoholism and things like that. So I was like, oh.
And this show did have some alcoholism in it. They cut it out of the dub, but in the episode where Sonic has to meet the president, they get all the press drunk because they're so long at the party.
Yeah, I saw some of that. So it's really interesting that the localization and the heavy editing done. It was like, I didn't know where to look for it. So did you notice like obvious places where it may differ from the Japanese?
Yes. To give you an example, there's an episode where Tanaka starts to take his clothes off, and in the dub, he says, "I don't deserve to wear this uniform." But I didn't go check in the sub, but I'm relatively certain he was trying to commit seppuku there.
Oh yeah, because like he's like even when he's like sleeping, he's wearing a kimono, and I'm like, yes, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I like Mr. Tanaka. He's a great character, actually.
Yeah, like for a butler, like he's an excellent butler character. Like he's a surrogate father, and I think that's actually one of the weaknesses of the show. And I think we can probably talk about that now before we get into like the episode by episode thing. But yeah, I didn't like the Thorn Dicks. Dykes, sorry.
Thorn Dicks.
Yeah, but the other word isn't much better. But the thorns is that with the alien like pet genre, you kind of expect the kid to be in like a bad situation. And that's kind of like the trappings of that genre. It's like, yeah, the alien comes into the kid's life to complicate things and like be the shining light of like, oh, good things can happen to any kid in a bad situation. And it's like absent parents or abusive household or bullies at school. But Chris has friends. He's a millionaire's or billionaire's child. His parents are absent, but you know, they're loving and they actually show a lot of remorse for not being more in their kids' lives. There's this Doc and from Back to the Future thing with his uncle. He has like a caring maid and housekeeper and butler, and it's like,
yeah, his life's great.
Yeah, his life is great, and I don't like him for that reason.
<It's> like, yeah, he's that's in my notes as well. that Chris is not a likable character. His only problem in his life, he doesn't get attention from his parents. And there's plenty of people out there with that problem and a lot worse. And he gets to hang out with Sonic the Hedgehog. So, yeah, I see, this is... A lot of the problems I had with Sonic the Hedgehog is the same problems I had in 2003 when I was 9 years old. They focus on the human characters a little too much, especially in the early half of the season. And I just don't like them, especially Chris. Chris Thorndike is just he's a character that's there to propel the story, and it's just not a very good character. I don't like him. I don't know what else to say about him.
No, it's fine, yeah, because, I mean, it's written in a way of, like you said, like the balance between the human characters has to be interesting. It's like kind of showing that, studios don't think Sonic is interesting by himself, I guess. Because, in the opening of the show, you see all the characters that get transported, and you're like, oh, well, now are we going to focus on Sonic, Sonic Friends adventures in the real world? It's like, oh, what is Big the Cat doing with Froggy, or what is
Nothing.
Rouge the Bat? Exactly. Rouge the Bat gets, shown for, a couple of seconds, and she's, hanging out with Eggman, but she doesn't show up until...
Yeah, and when she does show up, she's just spying on Chris Thorndike, who she has no idea who he is. And that's something I'd like to mention, is that this show overly relies on coincidence because it's a kid's show.
Right, yeah. It's like kids wouldn't recognize the incontinuity, or if that makes sense. Yeah, which it does, because Rouge is a spy, and she could be working for the government, but
at that point, she wasn't.
Also,
at that point, she was just happened to be there. There's no defending it. It's just she happened to be there. And there's all kinds of situations like that throughout the show. Eggman went to Japan at the same time as them. They didn't know Eggman was there, and Eggman didn't know that they were there. This is confirmed in dialogue. And yet you're telling me that they both happened to go to Japan at the same time. There's no Chaos Emerald there or anything.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's not really a Dragon Ball situation either, because if there was a Dragon Radar for the Chaos Emeralds, it's like, oh, the show should be 12 episodes, which I think that would be a great credit if there was a machete version of this. But anyways, she's a spy, but the government's also already spying on Chris because his teacher is a government agent. And that even has a lot of, slapstick comedy to it. But, again, that's another side character. And then, the president's assistant gets his own arc because he starts working and informing on Eggman for Eggman.
I don't know if I call it a whole arc.
but there's stakes to him doing his job. It's everyone has their own thing going on, and Sonic just laying back in a lot of episodes, just chilling until something provokes him to action. Which is cool, but it's just not enough for him to do or to feel like it's a Sonic story. It's more like boy finds Sonic and then boy goes on adventures.
Like I said, when I was 9 years old, my complaint with the show was Sonic isn't in this enough. especially I think it's best summarized by there's an episode where they're trying to hide the fact that Sonic and his friends exist from Chris's family rather unsuccessfully. And Sonic's barely in that episode. And Kareem is the only one with any significant role in the episode, and she doesn't do much either. It's really an episode about the human characters, which isn't so bad, looking back. But when I was a kid, you gotta imagine you're waiting week by week to watch Sonic. And so you come to watch a Sonic episode, and there's no Sonic in this one. And it's just when you can watch it anytime you want, I think it's a little more forgivable. I think watching it now, I actually rather enjoyed that one. But, that was tough. And can we segue now into talking about the first episode? Because I'd like to talk about the first episode. I have a lot of thoughts on that one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so we usually give... When we talk about it, and then we talk about the 3-episode test, and, it's supposed to do the bare minimum of giving, people an hour to, kind of get adjusted to the premise, as well as introduce characters, the setting, the world, and themes. So, yeah, talking about the first episode, what really, do you think it passed the 3-episode test, one, and then what really said, oh, this is a good first episode?
Well, first I'd like to say this is one of those shows where the first episode is clearly separate from the rest of the show in a lot of ways. An example I'd give of this is Bleach, where the first episode is much darker than the rest of the show. And in this case, it's not like that as much as it is that Chris Thorndike isn't in the first episode. And so it's a much better episode because of that. But really, I think the first episode is one of the best first episodes of anime that I've seen. I mean, obviously, you heard my top 9 anime that influenced me. It's clear that I'm not an expert on the subject, but I think that the Sonic X premiere is extremely good. And I think that the second and third episode, because they start focusing on things that aren't Sonic and Eggman and really the characters from the game that you want to see, they don't focus on those. And because of this, I think that it, maybe the first 3 episode test is not passed, but I think as a whole, the season is good. But the first 3 episode test, and that's I think I'd critique the 3 episode test as maybe not being the end all be all to whether or not you watch a show.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because especially if you like a cartoon, or sorry, if like, you know, I was, what, how old would I have been back in the day? Would have been 11 watching this at the time. Yeah, like if you're doing it on a 1-to-1 basis or like watching it on a weekly basis, it's like, yeah, it doesn't really follow through because you're just so excited to see the next episode. So like, but if you're binging it, especially with the more exposure you have to other animes and shows, like you're like, oh, okay, well, what is like 1 hour of your time worth? So yeah, it's maybe not always the best indicator or barometer, but it does have at least a little bit of validity on the side of like, oh, how is the story going to show off like writing credits? Like, oh, how strong is the writing going to be, at least in the setup of the story? But yeah, the first episode, and we can talk a little bit more about the opening of the show, the Gotta Go Fast theme as well, that like hypes up the show as well. But yeah, with the first episode, you get the idea that, well, you get one, the introduction to characters that you won't see for several episodes. I mean, Rouge the Bat doesn't really come in until like 17 episodes down the line, and she gets her own kind of episode. But yeah, it is purely a isekai and getting introduced to the new world, and like the Uncle Sam, which we'll get into like later, talking about the big race between him and Sonic. But yeah, it's like it set up the antagonistic nature of like a human that sees like Sonic as a threat, as well as like the police can't handle Eggman as well. So there's a lot of things that go into it. And I do like the second episode though, because Sonic does rescue Cream. You get the showing of like the tornado from Tails, and like there's some still elements like to that Sonic and Friends in the first 3 episodes. But yeah, then it divulges into the third episode of, oh yeah, now it's a slice of life with the kid being the focus.
Yes, and Chris Thorndike is really one of the big negatives of the show. He's not relatable. He's not interesting. Everyone around him is a better character than he is. Mr. Tanaka, Chuck, I love Chuck, great character. His grandson sucks. Ella is even a good character. I mean, I think we mentioned just a little bit of a racial stereotype, perhaps, of the, I would say, of like a Latina maid, which I think was a bigger stereotype in 2003 than we think of it that now. I haven't really seen that. But stuff like that was in My Name is Earl, that was in Family Guy. So maybe that didn't age well, but I like the character, you know, even if maybe it's a stereotype. And so, yeah, I think not all the human characters are bad. And I think almost all of them would make a better main character than Chris Thorndike. But especially Helen would be the best possible main character for this show. The episode with her and Sonic is just bliss. But that's getting a little off topic. Let's talk about the first episode, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that's perfect. Because, yeah, I think that there is a lot of, like, it shows off the main, I guess it does what the first episode does, but it shows off the core idea, is that Sonic is not terribly OP character, but the idea that the world is just so outclassed, especially on the level of technology, because I think that's the menace Eggman will have in the future. It's like his technical genius is just so either generations or decades, centuries beyond what Earth is now. So like that's the level that Sonic needs to compete against, and then humans are just left behind. But yeah, what's particular about the first episode you like so much?
The first episode makes you think that the show is about Sonic fighting Gundams, which is such a cool concept. Like, the animation in the first episode clearly has a bigger budget than it does later on, and it shows there's all this cool robots that look like they're out of a mecha anime, and instead of like the later robots, I don't hate them. I think they're interesting designs, but they're not as cool. And so it makes you think that this show is going to be about Sonic. And really, it's not. It's a reverse isekai, as we mentioned. So the first episode is great because it's just a really solid first. I cannot express to you how hyped I was at the end of the first episode when I was 9. I was so psyched for this show, maybe more than I've ever been psyched for a show in my life. And really, it didn't it didn't meet those expectations, but it's still a good show. But what gets me about this episode is I think the race between Sonic and Sam Speed, that moment at the end when Sonic just, you know, Sam Speed thinks he's about to get Sonic, thinks he's evenly matched with him, but Sonic was just playing with him the whole time. And he just goes out of there. It's almost like, it's like a moment out of Dragon Ball Z where it's just, oh, you thought you were as good as me. You're not even anywhere close. And, you know, he just flies off and then he's gone. And then he meets Chris Thorndike and the show goes south after that. But what do you think? Do you think I'm right on that or what?
No. Yeah. Because even in the opening of the show, and we can break that down a little bit more too now, is that the race between him and Sonic is kind of the showcase of what Sonic stories are about. It's like letting him go fast, and what are people trying to do to keep up with his speed. And like, we'll talk a little bit more, but that race, that sense of antagonism, does have its own episode where there's a desert race or wacky races kind of.
That's like a follow-up to the pilot.
Yeah. It's like part two, because like he does disappear as a antagonist, because, you know, of course Eggman's the antagonist, but it's like the human, not Eggman, but it's,
he's
like,
more like, yeah, a rival, really. It's kind of like a Goku Vegeta relationship almost, or a, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if he was some kind of, you know, equivalent version of, because he does have that pride thing. It's like, that's how he coaxed Sonic into kind of racing, or that's like his whole point is like, oh, let me play to Sonic's pride as being the fastest thing on Earth. It's like, oh, well, I'm faster, so you'd be second fastest, which again plays into how three-dimensional Sonic is that he can be goaded into things, especially when you talk about,
yeah, but
the
he
others.
Wasn't though.
No, that's what I mean. It's like, that's more of a showcase of the other characters, like Knuckles, where he gets tricked by Eggman into fighting against Sonic in, I guess, episode 5 or 6. But we can talk more about the individual episodes, but going back to the opening real quick, is that the race is the showcase. Shadow gets shown, even though he doesn't show up until season 2. The Guy Go Fast theme shows off like the high energy that the show kind of sells you on Sonic speed, the like punk rock or rock kind of music throughout the OST. And then the episode closes, episode 1 closes off with Sonic falling into like a pool and has to be rescued by Chris. So you're like, oh, okay, so yeah, Sonic is in a situation where he needs help, or at least he needs a guide in the human world. So it's like, okay, well, that's cool and a very good way to introduce Chris as a character. But yeah, then it falls off there because it gets into family drama and there's so much bloatedness that comes into different stories and the human characters. But yeah, let's go into specific special episodes, because there are so many episodes that just stand out in the whole run of the first season. So, Kevin, do you have like a one that you really want to talk about?
Yes. I believe this episode, hold on, I have some notes here. Let me make sure. I think it's the 5th episode. Let's see if I'm right. It's the one with Knuckles. And yes, it is. This is the definitive Knuckles story. It's the classic tale. They adapted this episode into the Sonic 2. Like, it's the same story. I mean, it's, you know, obviously enhanced and elaborated on more. But Knuckles gets tricked by Dr. Eggman into thinking that Sonic is keeping, you know, is being selfish and the bad guy. You know, they come to a misunderstanding, they figure things out, and they team up against Eggman and defeat him. It's a very simple story. I think this is a seminal work in the Knuckles character. And I think that's a really great episode. I mean, one of the better ones of this season, I'd say. What did you think of that?
Yeah, because like, that's the first time I noticed like certain designs to the robots that Eggman calls up, because, you know, it's the whole Sentai thing of Monster of the Week, but there seems to be a lot of creative attention to the robots and the monsters design, especially with this one, because like has like scoop hands, like I forgot that machine, like the excavator hands too, and then it has like a circular or see-through like middle part. I just like, just really appreciated the design. But yeah, it's kind of like I do like that. When you first kind of get Knuckles, he's very resolute to standing opposed to Sonic, and it kind of plays into that Knuckles is a guardian first, and Sonic is creative or chaotic good in his kind of carelessness with his power. So I do like that dichotomy that they put Sonic and Knuckles opposed, but again, it's not something that can be like a season-long arc for them. It's just like, oh, okay, quick fight. Eggman betrays Knuckles and shows his true colors, and then Sonic and him are friends, or, you know, at least passing more of the Vegeta Goku, like, passing respect kind of thing. So I do like that enough, but, you know, I wouldn't want to see more of it. But yeah, all right, cool. Next episode.
Okay, another highlight that I really enjoyed was the baseball episode. That one is just so great. I really like Chuck in that episode, because they're all like, we can't just have the Chaos Emerald depend on this baseball game. And Chuck's like, he's all about it. And I just think, you know, it's very slice of lifey, very funny. You know, maybe it has a lot of the elements that I complain about the show, that it's not about Sonic. But it manages to be a great episode that wins me over.
Yeah, because it shrinks down, like, the whole... because, like, again, like, sports are, you know, combative. So it's, like, getting to see the characters in, like, more of a relaxed state. And it's not always the world at stake. It's like, yeah, the Chaos Emerald is the prize. But, you know, we can decide the MacGuffin item over a baseball game. And, you know, it gets to show off a lot of the strengths of the show. Is like this physical Looney Tunes kind of slapstick humor. And, like, using their powers in a very specific way, or in, like, creative way. And then it showcased, like, the goofy nature that, you know, Robotnik and his what are his henchmen called again? I forgot.
Like, all of them as a whole, or just
the two main henchmen?
Yeah. Oh, they're Boko and Deko, I believe are their names.
Yeah, Boko and Deko. Like, yeah. And even in, like, a future episode, you kind of see that they have their own, like, not antagonism about, but they have, like, a really jokey nature, and they can, like, criticize. Like, he's like, those are the two, you know, henchmen that Robotnik does kind of take seriously.
On TV Tropes, it's under the those two guys tropes. You know, it's like Bebop and Rocksteady and Ninja Turtles, and there's a ton of examples of this. It's like the people in Power Rangers who are there but aren't the big bad. They're just kind of there for comic relief, and it's usually two people. In fact, the older Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon had Scratch and Grounder in the same role. And in the future, after this show, the Sonic games introduced Orbot and Cubot, who fulfilled the exact same role.
Orbot and Cubot. Yeah, I know them from the Frontiers, just because, yeah, the introduction of Sage as their, you know, quote-unquote sister. But yeah, it's very interesting that how that was kind of expanded with Robotnik. But yeah, baseball is like the sports episode. You know, there's a beach episode, there's a yacht episode, but there's a lot of episodes in the whole, like,
there's a lot of episodes with a noun you can put in front of them and know exactly which episode you're talking about, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
The ghost episode. Oh yeah, that one.
Okay, ghost episode. Okay, so next ghost episode. Yeah, again, like, okay, going into, like, supernatural aspects if they wanted to go into lore, but that's not the direction they took.
That episode's terrible. I'll just stay on and say it. Well, and you know why? It's because Eggman's not in it, for one thing, but also it just doesn't feel like a Sonic X episode. It feels like it's supposed to be in a different show to me. And it's cool. It's interesting because I want to like that episode, because the ghosts are actually Sonic Adventure 2 enemies. King Boom Boo, I believe is the name. And that's really, it was really cool seeing him on screen. It's like, oh yeah, but the boss of Sonic Adventure 2. You know, it's instantly, like, connecting in my head. But it's a lousy episode, because it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't have, like, a lesson. It just wasn't well done. And I gotta say, I like most episodes, but not that one.
Yeah. Do you think it's, like, one of those, like, if there was a machete version of Sonic X, you would...
Absolutely. I'd cut that one 100%. It'd be the first one I cut. Well, okay, The first one I cut would be the one where he gets the microchip in his ear and he's just running. That one, it's funny, and I like that it's funny, but the concept is so ludicrous that I can't get it. I can't.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because you can stray too far from, like, either source materials or just have a element that just doesn't seem like it would, like, be cohesive to the world itself. But, yeah, if you're looking at, like, those little Easter eggs to, you know, the video games or the franchise as a whole, then, yeah. It's nice to have those, but yeah, if it's not largely serving the adaptation, then it's not really useful. But all right, ghost episode down. Another one?
Well, but let me ask you this first. Yeah. What's your favorite episode of the show?
Oh, I kind of don't agree with the failure of the three episode test. I think it does set the tone of the show. I think this, because of the strengths and the weaknesses of the show, kind of, they are very upfront. It's like, oh, this is a Chris story, and kind of, you know, Sonic is kind of taking the back seat to it.
I mean, I kind of do like isolated episodes. They do enough of those. I mean, the yacht episode is kind of like the one that I was kind of like, kind of sold on it because it shows a, I don't know, maybe darker version of Sonic or like what's wrong with his character. Because one, he's freaking out about being stuck in one location. He's doing like all these, like he's jumping off of the yacht, jumping off the yacht to get to land. He also like kind of maydays to Eggman to save him. It's like all these like immature things that he does that makes the whole Knuckles and Sonic conflict, you know, make sense.
I like that episode as well.
But I do very much like the final, the finale, but, and maybe we can get to that at the end of the episode, but I think the finale is a really good, you know, transitional piece to the next season, which, again, I think we talked about a little bit, is more of a non-original story and focuses more on the adventure series.
There's a lot of game adaptations there. Not only do they adapt Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, but they actually get into adapting Sonic Battle, which is a often ignored Sonic game just because there's so many Sonic games. And it's just not part of that main series. But okay, we'll get to the finale. But another episode I'd really like to bring up is the one where Sonic evades the U.S. government to hang out with a handicapped girl. Because I think that really tells you about where Sonic's priorities are. He is ignoring the President of the United States to hang out with a girl because he said, oh, I promised to hang out with her. Which, first of all, it's weird because they've never interacted before that episode at all. But they give an explanation for it, and it's just that might be... I think I probably said the first episode my favorite episode, but I think that episode is actually my real favorite episode, I'm really being honest with you, because it's just, it's so sweet, and it's so humorous. They get the, the press drunk waiting for Sonic to show up. A lot of good humor there, and a lot of good character moments, and really has a good message. I love that one.
Because it kind of just shows like the morality of Sonic a lot stronger than like in a lot of the other episodes. He's just waiting for action to happen, but like kind of here it's like an actual Sonic episode, and again it just shows that he's an inspiration. He's a good guy for a reason. Like it comes from a core character design of his. It's like, yeah, I'm the fastest thing alive, but also like I'm a guy here to help people. And I think that's really sold, especially with, you know, talking about kids with disabilities, which, again, I think one student in Chris's class is, like, in a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's the episode with her.
Yeah, I know, but, like, she gets introduced in, like, the very first episode. Like, you see her in the background. So it's, it like, pretty a carry early. Through.
Yeah.
And you get to see that carry through line to, like, oh, that these aren't just background characters. It's, like, a world that they consciously created to set up later on. So yeah, it's like showing off good writing, but also just showing off the character. Cool.
Okay. Next. The last episode before the finale I'd like to discuss briefly is the race episode. That one's great.
Right.
Isn't that one great?
Yeah.
Like because Sonic won't race and they make a dumb robot. It's so great.
Yeah. And it shows another thing that I don't think we brought up yet is that Sonic is a celebrity and he's being actively pursued by the government, by people on Earth, and it's like, yeah, the reason why Chris needs to be a millionaire child is because they have an estate with guards and fences and gates and security. So like Sonic's just not always hounded by people in the paparazzi. So like with this race episode, it's like, oh yeah, Chris Speed or Uncle Sam comes back into the
Sam Speed.
Yeah, Sam Speed. Desi, did I say Speed Sam?
You said Chris Speed.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because it's Thorne Dykes and Speed. But yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, the government has invested this research into being Sonic, and now Sam is showing up again to be the guy to outspeed Sonic. But again, it's like, you have no idea how fast Sonic is because he's always playing. Yeah, which is like an endearing thing, but it's like Goku never showing his true strength. He's always holding himself back so he has a challenge. But yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I can be lured into a race because I don't want to make out with a robot. Kind of makes Sonic kind of seem almost not perverse, but
I think it's just because the robot was weird. I don't think they're trying to say anything else than that. But they just needed a reason to have Sonic race. And can I comment on the ending of that episode? Is just no notes. It's perfect. So Sonic, you know, they complete the race and it looks like it's a photo finish, but it's a fake out. And they show the little clip and Sonic finishes the race and then goes back and finishes it again. And that's just such a great ending because they lured you into thinking it was a tie, and the fake out was so good.
Yeah, because I mean, they kind of showed that in some other instances and like other properties of speedsters. Because I'm thinking about the Flash or Invincible with Omni-Man or even Megamind. It's like these characters are just so unbelievably fast that they slow down for our perception of time, which is again just like a brilliant piece of writing for a overpowered character. So it's like. Leans into the comedy of Sonic as someone that just needs to dumb down his speed so people can perceive him properly. But again, it just kind of sells the idea of like, yeah, you're never going to catch him.
And so before we talk about the finale, before we move on to that, I'd like to bring up one thing just to make sure I don't forget. The reaction from the public at the time when Sonic X came out was largely negative, but from the hardcore fans. They did not like the new voices. They wanted the Sonic Adventure voices. They were upset about these four kids' voices. You know, people don't like change. Even people didn't like Eggman. People thought that the Eggman from the Sonic Adventure, or not Sonic Adventure, Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon from the 90s was better. Like, and it's just complete 180 now in perception. Because obviously, we really like them. They're kind of our voices for those characters in a lot of ways. And I just think that's interesting, that turnaround. And I don't know how anyone could not like Mike Pollock as Eggman. He's just perfect.
Yeah, because it's like a thing of, like, what is new? Like, you kind of have to prove yourself first. And again, if Eggman didn't have, like you said, like, the sinisterness to his voice or Mike Pollock's performance, it's like he wouldn't have stuck around for 10-plus years or, you know, going on 20 years now. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's 20 years.
Yeah. And again, maybe talking about the controversy of the live action is that, like, they gave the voice to Chris Schwartz. Is that his name? Ben Schwartz.
Ben Schwartz, that's it, yes.
Same thing as with Chris Pratt playing Mario now.
Yeah, I honestly hate that stunt casting. But I will say Ben Schwartz did a good job. But what they did that was so surprising and just warms my heart so much is that they did not recast Tails. The current voice of Tails in the games is the same voice as in the movie. And I just think that's great.
Oh, interesting. I didn't write down that voice actor. Because I was thinking, like, Chris Pollock as Eggman, Jason Griffin as Sonic, and then Chris...
Well, that wasn't the same Sonic. Tails is in Sonic X.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. That was the 2010s Tails, is the same one as in the movie. And she does a great job. She does a great job. I prefer her Tails over the one in Sonic X, although I do still like the one in Sonic X. It's, you know, that's the Tails I grew up with.
Right, yeah. Because, like, people can be nostalgic for a voice, but also, like, a voice can definitely carry the character and, like, embody them. So, like, you know, when you hear a voice, it's like, oh, this is that character.
That's Tails, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because there's, like, innocence. You can portray innocence or certain emotions in a voice, or, like, Tails is kind of, like, idol worship Sonic, so like all that can come across in a good voice performance. So for the season finale, we can talk about it now. It's like, how do you feel as a segue into, like, from season one to season two? Because season two is like a actual existing storyline for Sonic, but
it mostly is. Like, it adapts several, I think it might even do them in a weird order, I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But I really think that this one almost ends on a cliffhanger. So let's just talk about the finale as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I think I really liked the finale. It's a really good episode. Eggman is, and let me tell you, I actually watched the finale both dub and subbed earlier today. And the dub is much better just because the score is just wrong in the Japanese version. It doesn't have that impact. And Eggman's, what was it? The Eggsterminator? They call it the Egg Emperor in the Japanese version, but it's called Eggsterminator. And it's vicious. It's more vicious than we've ever seen Eggman, except actually, no, that one episode where they destroyed Eggman's base. We should have talked about that one, but oh well, we skipped it. That one was maybe Eggman at his most vicious, but this was a close second. And, you know, they smacked Sonic through several buildings. I mean, and they showed Eggman in the Eggsterminator. Like, they destroyed all those beetles. I'm pretty sure those had people in there. Like, Eggman killed those people. And so, you know, you try not to think about that because it's a kid's show, but, like, it's kind of kind of vicious in that in the finale, and then Sonic, it's very similar. Like Sonic X is a seminal work for the Sonic franchise, as I've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Like the Sonic 2 movie ends with the Super Sonic, and he just instantly outclasses him, and it's almost like there are pieces of it that are almost shot for shot with this episode.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, even if you want to bring it back to Frontiers, there was a very important, or there's a very important climax to the story involving Super Sonic. So it's like, yeah, that's always the payoff. That's the money shot for Sonic, because he's already OP as is, but when he goes Super Sonic, you know it is either a serious threat. And then I kind of don't like how, especially in the final moments of like the episode, or at least in the setup to the episode, is that Chris is the instigating, you know, fall to all the bad things going on. So like Chris is the reason why those people got killed, or why Eggman even gets the emeralds. It's like, okay, he's won this Doc from Back to the Future. He's a Marty stand-in, like with his grandfather being like an inventor and things. Like he's been shown through the series to be like, you know, intelligent, flawless kid, and now he just faults and does a dumb kid thing at the end. And like, okay, he's even more less likable than he was at the beginning.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that. Those people only died because of Chris Thorndike. Yeah, it sucks is that they could make that interesting for Chris Thorndike. They just don't put the time in. Because, you know, they could make that feeling, make him have feelings of guilt over this. Or, and I guess they show it a little bit, but it just doesn't have the payoff because we already just don't like him. So, yeah, that is a negative. And in the Japanese version, because I watched the Japanese version of this episode as well, and he's less likable in that because he goes on about how, no, you can't take Sonic away from me. And it's like, that's so sad. He's just being selfish. He's being a selfish little brat. And I'm glad they changed that in the dub because they make him a little less of a brat there. And I think the episode's better for it.
Cause the most faulty thing with his character in the dub, at least, is that he doesn't initially know why his parents are, well, he knows why his parents are away from home all the time, but he doesn't translate that to like understanding that they also want to be home.
I don't know if they do. I feel like if they did, they have enough money to quit their jobs and be home, but that's another discussion.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but there's also some very tiny things that I think you mentioned a little bit earlier that we can talk about to kind of wrap up the conversation, because there's so much jammed into the 26 episodes. So like, even
he has a lot of stuff there.
Yeah So we like glossed over like his celebrity nature of Sonic, like the paparazzi,
that the military attacked Eggman. We glossed over that.
Right. Yeah. Cause like they're spying on him, and also there's like this, what's the Watergate kind of parallels, because they're working, like the dude shows up in like a trench coat and talks to Eggman and informs on him to Sonic. But also there's a lot of political intrigue going on in the show and political discourse that kind of just gets swept under.
It's so political, and it's just, I think it's part of that 9/11 post 9/11 era where, you know, America was at the forefront of everyone's minds, and like, you know, the Bush administration, and it's just there's a lot of political stuff in this, and I think if they made this 10 years before or 10 years after, it wouldn't be there, but because of it was made in 2003 in that era, that's why that stuff is there. Sonic gets a U.S. passport. Like that's wild, is it not?
Right, because he's under the protection of the American government, essentially. Like he's seeking asylum, essentially. But you know, they don't go too far into that. But that's what's happening.
They made Congress passed a Sonic law. That was said in an episode. They passed a Sonic budget. That's crazy.
Because like he's viewed as a military asset.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. And Rouge, who actually is a military asset in this show, like, really, she's kind of part of the CIA-type organization, and which actually is setting up a little bit, because at the end, in the last episode, they talk about how, you know, this is Gunn, and Gunn is from Sonic Adventure 2. And so, and they also did that same thing, by the way. They set up Gunn in Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the movie. Like, the movie owes a lot to this show, I gotta say.
Oh, good. Oh, I didn't even catch that parallel. Because, yeah, then in 2005, Shadow the Hedgehog comes out, and that's where Gunn really blossoms as an organization. But then Gunn also gets mentioned in Frontiers again. So, yeah, there's a lot of interweaving, or at least attention to detail. And same thing as mentioning with the Sonic X comics that was written by Ian Flynn. Like, there's a lot of intertwining of ideas, but again, it's not a one-for-one recreation of what happened in the season in the comics.
Right, it has 40. The same DNA.
Right, which is nice. Again, you don't always want to just see the same thing just in a different medium. You want to kind of see like branching ideas. But yeah, they also have 6 light novels, again, talking about how much there could have been in the series and like intrigue, but kind of just flush it out in like a narrative form. But yeah, Sonic X had a lot on his mind.
Can we talk about how, like, while we're on the politics discussion, that Eggman is, in some episodes, not every episode, a Saddam Hussein stand-in? Like, he really is. He's like a terrorist.
Yeah, because he, well, one, of course, he wants to dominate the Earth, but also his kind of methods to going about it is very, I don't know, dictatorish or a despot. Like, he's never played as the good guy. He's like very one-dimensional in his evilness, and that's kind of just a characterization of, you know, foreign leaders at the time. It's like, yeah, if you're going to look at the time of, you know, political height in the US and what people might respond to, it's like, oh yeah, there's no validation, there's no good side to what a foreign leader might be doing.
You went over my head a little bit there, sorry.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, so like how Eggman persuades Knuckles is like saying, oh, the Chaos Emeralds needed to be contained or be protected from Sonic. So like there was something he could trick.
Yeah, he makes Sonic out to be the bad guy.
Right. Which Sonic kind of is like the, I guess if you want to say like, oh, what is the American stand-in? It's like, oh, someone that is doing chaotic good things for the world, but can be seen as a force for evil or for selfish intention.
I gotta say, I think the America stand-in in this show is just America. I mean, the president's out there trying to get Sonic to shake his hand for re-election campaign. It's political satire. It like really is in this show that's not even American. And it's that's just, you know, that's so crazy that that's in the show, because it doesn't need to be. You know, that's just the direction they went with it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, like, it looks like it was written that way, but there was no, it doesn't feel like you can talk about the Japanese version of it. It's like Chris has written a little bit more harshly, and maybe some of those are like more criticizing America politics at the time. But
well, no, I think it's pretty pro American both times, really.
Oh, okay.
I really do. I mean, it's the political satire is more played for laughs, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's doing this for re-election, ha ha ha. But nobody ever says the president's a bad guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever really interpreted as the villain of the story, at least not in season 1. I don't really remember anything season 2 either. Mm-hmm. The only thing that he did, that the government really did, that I think was probably seen as negative by everybody, was when they put a bomb on Rouge. I think that's, you know, I don't think any viewer was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I think everyone was probably thinking, oh no, they're bad guys. But after that, I feel like it was really, because it's you got to remember when this was made. Like, this is the huge propaganda times for America. Mm-hmm. And they had to have known that in Japan. They had to have known that making something very critical for American audiences, because make no mistake, this show, while Japanese, was not made for the Japanese. It takes place in America, and Sonic has always been more popular here than in his home country. So there's no doubt in my mind that this show was made for us.
Right. And just to mention, like, the popularity of it grew overseas so beyond what it was in, you know, domestically for Japan, is that the 3rd season premiered in the U.S. and didn't premiere until, like, years later in Japan.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain the only reason they made it is because the ratings here were so good. It's so funny because they made the show in Japanese first, didn't air it, and they dubbed it completely new score. Why'd they even make the Japanese score at that point? It's so interesting to me.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting case, and I'm glad that we revisit it. So just to wrap up the conversation, Kevin, so would you, at the end, we always ask if it should be resurrected, meaning be brought back, and you recommend it to people that are like looking to get into the Sonic franchise, or to rebury it, meaning that it can stay in the past, it's of its time, it hasn't aged well. Would you recommend Sonic X?
I'd recommend it to hardcore Sonic fans, especially those that are interested in the history of the character, and especially those who are in their late 20s, early 30s right now, because they probably, if they missed this show, which is crazy, they probably really liked Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, and season 2 is going to get into that a lot. And it's just, So yeah, I'd say for Sonic fans, yes, I wouldn't recommend this to some guy on the street, you know, just some guy with no other information, even if it was an anime fan, because this is a Sonic show. Like, this is not necessarily the greatest anime ever made, but I enjoy it, and I think it's, for Sonic fans, it's a very good show.
Oh, awesome. So, yeah, I mean, you have, like, most recently Sonic Frontiers as a video game, again, which was a revitalization of it, and I think
so
you
good.
pretty much enjoyed it. To the extent that, you know, there are some problems with it. Again, of course, it's, you know, again, maybe one of those hardcore fans were voicing their opinions more than just general critics.
It's finally good to be a Sonic fan again. After 10 years of it being kind of just okay to be good to be a Sonic fan, it finally feels good. And I'm hoping whatever they have coming up next is going to be able to keep that momentum, because Sonic Frontiers is not a perfect game. You know, you'll walk around and stuff will just appear out of nowhere. I mean, you know, those kind of graphical things are annoying, but it's, you know, it's, when you're thinking about Sonic games, there's always some kind of caveat like that, because they're always so experimental and they're trying different things. But Sonic Frontiers was a triumph. Sage is one of the best characters they've ever done. This story is, I haven't been invested in a story about a blue hedgehog since I was like 13, and I'm back. I'm back to being 13, invested in Sonic again.
And it helps that Ian Flynn, who has been a long time, you know, absolutely, another avid Sonic fan, is like in charge of it. You know, if he wants to be the Kevin Feige of the new, you know, Kevin, or the new generation of Sonic merchandise or storyboards, then I'm all for it. Because like with Sonic Prime on Netflix, seemed to receive really decent ratings. Sonic Boom was a good step. Sonic Prime. And then the movies, of course, Sonic 3 is coming out, I believe, this year. Well, no, 2023, 2024?
Yeah, I think it's next year. I'm not sure.
Yeah, 2024, yeah. And then as well as, like, Boom was a good step in the right direction as well, getting, like, younger kids of this generation onto the Sonic bandwagon. But, yeah. All right. So that brings a close, or at least that is a recommend for both of us, because Sonic X, like, you said, it's like just a timepiece, and it does capture a beginning to what many fans consider like the authentic, or like at least the core version of the characters. And then you can expand into the comics, IGW or the Archies, and then get more of it. But yeah, for right now, I think Sonic X is just a standalone great property that you can invest potentially 78 episodes into it. But yeah, for the first 26, pretty good start to it. So that brings a close to our 20-year anniversary review of Sonic X. All right, so celebrating its 20th anniversary on April 6th. So thank you, Kevin, for coming on and talking about Sonic so avidly.
Thank you so much for having me. I watched this show when it first came out, first day on Fox Box, which doesn't exist anymore, dubbed by 4Kids, which doesn't exist anymore. 20 years is a long time, but I still exist, and I'm glad I got to revisit this.
Yeah, let's see if there's going to be some more 20-year reviews coming up. We'll see what comes. But if you like this episode, please like and subscribe. And until next time, peace.